it's better. This talk is going to be a little bit on the borderline between physics, mathematics, and computer science, but by lack of computer time, we will skip most of the computer details. And the physics is usually the beginning, and then next we end up in some mathematics. So, well, this is the outline of the talk. So, lately, harmonic sums have become rather interesting in particle physics because we have been able to tackle a number of problems with them. And, well, I don't know an exhaustive list of this, but I know personally about two of them. One I have been involved in myself, and that is calculating three-loop splitting functions on anomalous dimensions and deep inelastic scattering, which was solvable only because we could transform this into a summation problem. If it had been an integration problem, it would not have been solvable. It would have been impossible to guarantee the correctness of the result. And then another problem in Feynman diagrams was two-loop Baba scattering, where one could do Mellon-Barnes transformations and then transform the whole problem again to a summation problem and then solve the sums. Now, these are all new techniques, and actually they're becoming more and more popular in different parts of particle physics as well. And so a lot of new things are to be discovered there. There is a lot of knowledge about integrals, but relatively little about sums. And unfortunately, the mathematicians couldn't help us very much here at all. So that means that most of the discovering has to be done by the physicists. So we are going to concentrate here in the framework of this talk on sums to infinity. And they are usually coming out of calculations, for instance, of calculating basic Feynman diagrams. And these sums then have all kinds of properties. And by studying those properties, we hope to understand the answers better. And so that we can do more complicated calculations. And so the idea is that we want to first study our solution space, because if we don't understand the solution space, then it's kind of pointless to start the calculation. So the way to study this is that in mathematics there are actually very few theorems about this subject. Euler has started much of this, but then not much progress was made until the 90s when the mathematicians got a little bit interested again. But most of it is in terms of conjectures and very little in terms of theorems. So we'll add a few more conjectures ourselves. But we try to get more information about these sums by just applying brute force, and I really mean brute, by getting more information about these guys, so getting calculating relations for them. And, well, that is the computer aspect of it, and then the idea is to study, of course, the results that come out. Now, what I mean with force is that we use the program that can do that best, and that is form, and actually the latest variety, T-form, which can use a lot of cores together, computer cores, so that it runs 8 computers actually in parallel. And that comes in rather handy when you have expressions with like a billion terms. So this is the worst we ran into at a certain moment, where it had in one step chewed its way through 1.2 times 10 to the 12 terms. I was kind of impressed that it still worked. Okay, so now let's go to what are we really after. So harmonic sums are defined by sums over these the 1 over I to the M. That comes from 1 over 2 plus 1 over 3 plus 1 over 4, which is considered in music the harmonic sequence. So that's where the name comes from. And then you can make a rather nasty notation, but it works well in computers, that you also have alternating sums, and you can start nesting the sums. That's the same way. So These are then harmonic sums. And the mathematicians define them a little bit differently. They put a minus 1 here, I minus 1, that has sometimes advantages and sometimes disadvantages. But the mathematics notation we call Z sums. The physicists usually use S. And so if there are only, if these alternating sums are not there and we have the sums to infinity, then we call them multiple zeta values. So that's the definition of a multiple zeta value, these nested sums. Then there is a related type of function, which is called harmonic polylogarithm, which is a matter of nested integrals, where you have three types of functions. And by just nesting them and integrating, so you start here, and then you start nesting these integrals, and whenever you put a 1 over x, you put in the index field of the function, you put a 0. If you had a 1 minus x, you put a 1, and if you had a 1 plus x, you put a minus 1. So you get sequences of indices here. And then with the sums, we had indices that were not zero, but we can make a unifying notation by actually adding the zeros to the non-zero element to the right of them, preserving the sign, or taking the sums apart like this. This is very handy because that way you can actually tell how many sums there are or how many of these functions. And the number of arguments in this, what we call integral notation, is called the weight of the sum or the integral, and the number of indices when you are have it in sum notation is called the depth. Those are two important concepts. So if you have alternating sums, that means that there is somewhere a minus sign, then we call them Euler sums. And the interesting part is that the sums in infinity are related to the integrals in 1. This has very interesting consequences. Okay. So, like I said, you can look how many there are by looking at this notation with the zeros. And the number of Euler sums that exist, where you could have 0, 1, or minus 1 at every position, goes with powers of 3. The only thing is that for non-trivial sums, the last one should never be 0. And if the first one is 1, then the sum is divergent. So if we skip those, actually we have 4 times 3 to the power w minus 2 of those objects, of those Euler sums. And if you have only 0 and 1, and you demand that the last one is not 0 and the first one is not 1, then you have 2 to the power w minus 2 of them. So that means that if the weight grows, the number of these objects grows exponentially. And if you have to go to weight 6, for instance, which we had for a calculation, you have already 324 of these Euler sums. Now, there are relations between them. We will see in a minute. And so an example of such a relation is a very nasty one, which is pretty hard to derive, is that, for instance, this object can be expressed in the zetas. Zeta 2 is basically just a sum, that is this S2 or H01, and the zeta 3 is H001 or just H3. But you can express this guy in what's considered to be simpler objects. Now, here an example of how you run into something when you do your physics calculation. We had to do inverse Mellin transforms, so we had to go from sums to integrals. And this was a weight 6 object. This is just a little computer program. You're not supposed to be able to read the formula. I'm just going to show you how long it is if you are not using relations between these Euler sums. So this is the program, this is the beginning of the answer, this continuation. Now, if I know that there are relations between these objects, and then I apply those relations so that I derive everything into a minimal set of these Euler sums, then this is the whole answer. which is clearly a lot shorter. So that means it's very important, if you really want to be able to see whether two answers are identical, that you bring them to a unique form. And this is a problem that we all run into when we start doing these sums, that if you get answers with these numbers in them, that you manage to put them into some basis. And that way you can say more about the answer, and you can also tell whether two different calculations are really giving the same answer. Unfortunately, the mathematicians cannot help us here at all. There is no known constructive way to take one of these constants and express it into a basis. Already there's problems determining what is a good basis. So there are only two ways to figure out how to do this. One is write down all algebraic relations between these objects and solve the system of equations, make tables, and then substitute from the tables. So that means I would, for this weight 6 problem, I would have to make a table with 324 entries. The other one is that you guess a relation and you fit the coefficients with a program, with a numerical program that looks for rational relations between objects. You do this to a very large number of digits, and then the program looks for rational, simple rational coefficients between these objects, but you have to be very good at guessing because you have to figure out which objects should be related. Broadhurst has done a lot of this in the 90s, got amazingly far. You will see later in the talk. And so there are several conjectures about sizes of bases, but and there is one very good conjecture for the Euler sums. So, and for the multiple zeta values, there are some conjectures, but they're not really that great. They're not really very useful either. So what are these relations? Now, if I have sums, I can look if I sum over a square, so from 0 to something, from 0 to something, or from 1 to something, then I can have the part below the diagonal, the part above the diagonal, and the part on the diagonal, and from that you can derive relations between sums, so that if I multiply two sums with each other, I can get nested sums here, and so these are diagonal parts. And in the case of S sums, you get here all kinds of minus signs for the diagonals. In the case of Z sums, you get plus signs. Then for the harmonic polylogarithms, there is something called a shuffle algebra. If you really work it out, these are all the combinations between A and B and C and D, so that the order between A and B remains the same, and the order between C and D remains the same. But for the rest, you have all 6 combinations here. That's called a shuffle algebra. And this algebra is a little bit like the shuffle algebra, but there is extra stuff here, and that's why it's called a shuffle algebra. And so, now when you take the limit that n goes to infinity, in the sums, here we had an n. If we take the limit n goes to infinity, we get these multiple zeta values. If you take here the argument of the harmonic polylogarithms equal to 1, you get also multiple zeta values. So that means that the multiple zeta values obey both this set of equations and this set of equations. That is rather amazing, because there are I think it's the only non-trivial system in mathematics that that obeys two of those kind of shuffle-like algebras, and that is solvable in a sense that you don't get contradictions. Okay. Now the Euler sums actually obey more relations. This is a relation that actually should appeal to physicists, because it's a little bit like, if you put infinity here, infinity is two times infinity, so it's like a renormalization group-like equation. So it's called the doubling formula. If you have a sum like this, you can write it as a linear combination of all the possible signs here in 2 times n. And so if the sum is finite and I let n go to infinity, I get a whole class of relations. This class of relations does only hold if you are allowing minus signs here, so that only holds for the Euler sums. And then there is another category of relations which is completely new. We discovered that, for the paper is coming out pretty shortly. And that set of relations was really instrumental in the results I'm going to show you. But these relations, I cannot give a formula for. It is a computer algorithm to generate them. It's not a closed formula. And this is, I took it out. Sorry, I had an example of such a relation. It was 3 pages, very small print. And then sometimes you have to worry about the divergence sums, but okay, they're not really a problem because it's a logarithmic divergence. So now with all the above relations, we want to construct a computer program that generates all possible equations and then solves for the multiple zeta values, expressing them in some kind of a basis. And well, yeah, how far will we go? Well, the problem grows like 2 to the power w minus 3. Yeah, so that goes pretty fast. Now, how far did the mathematicians get? They had, the furthest they got was 3 Japanese people, Kaneko, Noro, and Tsurumaki. And they treated this as a matrix problem, and then their matrix had a size 2 to the power w minus 3 times 2 to the power w minus 4. And that had to do, it is not square, because half of their equations were rather easy implementable, so they could skip that part of the matrix rather quickly. And then they had to put that matrix inside the computer. Now, if you take a look at that, that goes with powers of 4. And so if you go to w equals 20 and each matrix entry is 2 bytes, then you have already 18 gigabytes and the computer wasn't any bigger. So that is how far they could go. Then they tried to diagonalize that matrix, but they only triagonalized it. And so they could only determine the size of the basis, not even what the basis looked like. And so we want to do better than that. And this matrix is rather sparse. I can determine that it must have at most 1 out of 2,000 entries, not 0. So they were mainly manipulating zeros. Now, for the Euler sums, actually, we have a power of 3. So that grows a bit faster. And there the current status was that a mathematics group in Lille had gone up to w equals 8. And I had gone with form tests, I had gone up to 10, and that was available already for quite a few years. And actually, you run into problems. Till 7, everything goes very fine. And then at 8, 9, and 10, you start needing this doubling formula. Otherwise, you just don't have enough relations. And at 11, these generalized doubling relations became important. But so if you want to go to 12, you need so many sums to determine. That become a bit impressive. So we have 3 types of programs, where we calculate everything over the rationals, where we calculate modulus a prime number just to determine what are basis elements, and we drop all stuff that's not interesting for us. And the third type of program, actually, we don't run everything, but we only run to a given depth, D. So, okay, results. So, first the Euler sums. The Euler sums we need, it's like the weight 6, we need it for a 3-loop calculation. Actually, for each loop, you need 2 units in weight more. So, having calculated everything to weight 12, we're ready for 6-loop calculations, basically. Well, okay, in this respect. But the problem here is that the output, if you have 250,000 expressions in terms of 25 variables plus products of lower weight objects, so you get a lot of objects in the right-hand side, you have certainly more than a gigabyte of tables. That's not really very pleasant. Yeah? So you see that the output becomes a much bigger problem than the computer time. The computer time here is less than 13 hours. It's a little bit more than 13 hours. That's not that much. And then we can calculate much more than this. If we only go to a limited depth, for instance, if we only go to depth 6, this was the worst run. That was a whole month. That was last March. And the program chews its way through 7 times 10 to the 12 terms. So don't try that with Mathematica. It's actually a very simple program. It's only 400 lines. But the multiple zeta values was more interesting because the mathematicians liked the multiple zeta values much better. So we calculated first with a 31 bits prime number. And then, so the Japanese got to here, but they only managed to determine the size of the bases. And here we have the full bases and everybody expressed in terms of basis elements. Except for that it is modulus calculus, and we can get to 24. And considering that this is a problem that goes with powers of 4 in the Japanese stuff, they will not be able to get this far. So that's the advantage of using computer algebra, because then you don't have to take all these zeros in the matrix into account. And actually, if you go to limited depth, because we noticed that all the basis element had a depth that was at most 1/3 of the weight. So in that case, running to limited depth was much more economical, and we could actually get a full basis up to weight 26, and almost a full basis up to weight 28, and then some parts all the way to 30. And all the conjectures thus far have been fulfilled. That is, well, either positive or negative, depending on how you look at it. Of course, you like to find something different. But now, having that, then we can make tables with all the relations complete, with the rational coefficients, etc. See how far we get, and actually we get that all the way to weight 22. So remember, the mathematicians only got actually the size of the basis at weight 20 and at weight 19 the same. And here we have the full expressions, 4 gigabyte of them, for weight 22. Okay, now this is a random element. Okay. Now we have more results, but of course, okay. Now the question is, of course, having applied all this brute force, what are you going to do with it? Yeah? Because we are physicists. We only do these things because we want to do something with it. In this case, the goal is, of course, actually to try to find a recipe for a decent basis that gives us some information, and B, the holy grail would be a constructive algorithm so that I can take any element and express it by some constructive algorithm into the basis. Because then I don't need those giant tables. Yeah? If I have a little subroutine of, let's say, 20 lines that would do that for me, I would be stupid to use 4 gigabyte tables. Yeah? So we want to try to find properties of basis elements and maybe other properties. So we put all these files together somewhere, and that's... everybody's talking about data mining, so we call that the multiple zeta value data mine. And at the moment, I think that I have there in bzipped format 33 gigabytes of files. So then they are best accessible with form, although many files are in text. But if you have a 4 gigabyte file, it's kind of hard to manipulate, and you definitely don't give it to Maple or Mathematica. So one of the first things you start looking up then is some of these relations that Broadhurst did with PSLQ. So it's guessing at very high probability and see whether you can find them now in these tables. So this was the first one. And indeed, you can find this relation in the tables. And you see quite bad fractions there sometimes. This is a very interesting relation because it's called a pushdown. And why is this very interesting? And so this is where the rest of the talk goes about. this is a multiple zeta value. It has only positive integers here. And as a multiple zeta value, it has to be written with four integers. You cannot write it with fewer. You cannot write it as a linear combination of multiple zeta values with fewer integers. But if you look it up in the tables of the Euler sums, there it can be expressed in terms of sums that are only depth 2 or less, products of sums that are. But the most complicated sums here have only two integers. They're alternating sums. But this is a very strange thing. Because you would like, actually, that you could stay within the multiple zeta values and do something like that, but that is impossible. That you can look up in the tables that this is impossible. And so there are more of these push-down relations, but this is the simplest one. And it is at weight 12. 8 plus 2 plus 1 plus 1 is 12. Weight 12, depth 4. And it pushes down to depth 2. The next one is at weight 15. And it is already much more complicated. But again, this here we have 5 integers. And on the right-hand side, the most complicated objects have only 3 integers. So again, the push down is by 2 units. Broadhurst located this relation also already in the 90s. But look at these fractions. That is not very pleasant. And the next one is at weight. There is one at weight 16. And at weight 17, actually, it gets a bit more complicated. Because there it is a linear combination of two objects that gets this push down. This is just one of the terms in the push down. With the tiny font, it worked just out right, but okay. So then you would like to know a little bit more about these pushdowns, because they seem to give some mathematics information here. And then the only system that we have complete control over is weight 12, as with these Euler sums. That was the biggest one that we could solve completely. And there we have this object so that we can study a little bit better. And then we find out that for the multiple zeta values, you have only these shuffles and these stuffles. But for the Euler sums, you also have this doubling and this generalized doubling. And it turns out it is this doubling relation that is responsible for this pushdown. Without using the doubling relation, you have a few more independent objects. And this pushdown doesn't take place. So this is very interesting, and the mathematicians have never looked at this. They hardly ever look at these Euler sums and these alternating sums. So they don't know anything about this. So we're really on our own here. Unfortunately, we cannot test the other pushdowns because the next one is at weight 15, and we cannot solve the whole system. And that means that if we only want to run to a limited depth, we need these so-called generalized doubling relations. And but if we want to check whether the doubling is responsible for the pushdown, then we are not allowed to use those. And then we have to solve the whole system. And, well, that runs a bit out of hand. If at weight 12 we have already more than a gigabyte, and it gets bigger by about a factor 6 for every weight, then you're talking about, well, 300 gigabytes answer or something like that. I haven't talked about computer time then. So it's a bit difficult. But okay, then that doesn't stop us, of course. So there are some conjectures about sizes of bases, how many elements there are in bases as a function of depth. And so this is for multiple zeta values. So the red ones are what we confirmed with our programs, indeed. The number of data basis elements for each depth and each weight. And this is something that they said that if you use it as an embedded in the Euler sums, what then the depth of the various basis elements is after pushdown. This table was not quite correct because they never considered a new phenomenon, which is called a double pushdown, where an element doesn't hop over 2 units of depth, but hops over 4 units of depth. And the first one is supposed to occur, it seems, at 27. That's a new discovery. But for the rest, it all seems to follow it. And so we found a prescription for a basis. Well, we don't have that much time, so I'm not going to give too much here. Then this gets a bit technical. Where you have to use the theory of Lindenwurz, and you choose all the elements with odd integers, but one excluded, and then the so-called Lindenwurz. And Lindenwurz is basically that if you cycle the indices around, if there is a unique smallest element, that then is the Lindenwurz, or in this case, maximal element. So, for instance, if you would have 4 fives, there is not a unique maximal element, so that cannot be a Lindenwurz. But this one can, because if I cycle it once, then the 3 ends up in a position that the word is smaller. Yeah? Now, it turns out that that set is exactly the size of the basis as a function of depth and weight of what Broadhurst and Kreimer give if you embed it in the Euler sums. But if you try to use it as a basis for the multiple zeta values, it doesn't work. Some elements cannot be written with odd indices only. And then, if you use the prescription that for some of these elements, you take the first 2 indices and you subtract 1 from them, and you add 2 ones, like here or here, then you can construct a basis for the multiple zeta values. This is rather poorly understood how that works. It is also not deterministic because we don't have a recipe for which ones you have to choose. That we have to do the run for that and then determine that this is indeed the basis. That is why we wanted that run that took the whole month of March so badly, because that gave this example complete. And then the funny part is that these elements with these ones, then, if you embed them in the Euler sums, that indicate a pushdown. That's why we call it a pushdown basis. So this is the complete recipe, but okay, skip. And then worked out, this is the whole basis for weight 26. Well, it's not unique. But this is a basis, and we have followed a certain prescription so that certain things are minimal. But, okay, it is possible to have different representations of this basis. But, again, here you have these so-called push-down elements that if you were to write this in terms of alternating sums, you would only need 2 for 6 indices and not 8 of them. And here is 27. And 27 we couldn't do completely because we couldn't get these elements, these last 2. But the funny part is that as far as we can determine, this should be the 2 missing elements. And this one has 4 ones here. That would be a double push down. So this is the basis below. Okay, good. Okay, so now we are close to the end. So we don't know how to work the prescription in a deterministic way. But at least it's progress, yeah? And we can come up with a basis that has something to do with the properties of these objects. And it is very clear that the embedding of these non-alternating sums in the alternating sums is of crucial importance, and nobody ever really looked at that. So these are the final conclusions that we have been looking at the properties of these multiple zeta values and these Euler sums, and we have been able to calculate a lot of them and found something interesting with respect to basis construction. And unfortunately, that the holy grail of the field we don't have yet. We don't have a constructive algorithm now to use this basis and to express everybody in this basis, and we still have to work with giant tables, but still. I mean, this is an enormous amount of progress because it points our noses in a certain direction that seems to be very promising. Okay.
We have a lot of time for questions.
Do you think that there's some kind of mathematical theory behind these, this pushed? I mean, do you think one day maybe one can understand predict these things without?
This push-down stuff is rather new in a sense, because Broadhurst noticed this in the 90s, but the mathematicians didn't really listen to him. Problem is that as a physicist, you discover something using a computer program that isn't exact, but only probabilistic, then the mathematicians are not really paying much attention. They know about these conjectures, but that's about it. And so I haven't seen the word push down in any mathematics paper. And now we have a lot more of them, because between the data mine and the PSLQ, where the data mine can point us towards push downs, even though the data mine doesn't have the complete result because we cannot run the alternating sums that far, but then PSLQ pointed in the right direction with already a good basis and everything can then do a lot of work. So we have all the push downs to weight 21 now at the moment. And this will add a lot to it, because now we can also study what kind of elements are involved there. And so it looks like you can always choose it in such a way that the right-hand side can be a combination of just simpler multiple zeta values and only one alternating sum. It's not proven. Yeah? And the most difficult one, the computer still hasn't been able to solve, the most complicated one we have, but it looks like that. And otherwise, we have another construction, which is also very simple, which is much easier to prove. But I'm sure that some of the mathematicians, as soon as the paper will come out and the data mine will be set open, that they will start getting interested in it.
And the doubling relation works also at finite n, so not for the multiple zeta values, but also
yes.
For the... What about the generalized doubling and the push-down relations?
No, that one works at infinity. It's usually specifically infinity.
But don't you think that they are some inheritance of maybe something to be discovered at finite n?
No, it is very difficult. It is the derivation of it is a very complicated recursion way of special representation of these sums when they are in infinity. And then you use a very special way of splitting the fractions in two different ways, and you have to percolate that through. And so and then you continuously use the property that these sums are in infinity. So it's very hard to picture it, and we have absolutely no idea at the moment what would be an equivalent in, for instance, the integral form of the sums. Because if it is in infinity, then it is the same as the integrals in one. Yeah? So there must be somewhere an integral equivalent of it. But it's so complicated if you do this. Well, for depth 2, it's still relatively easy. But as soon as you start going to depth 3, 4, 5, it gets hellishly complicated. Like I said, I had a relatively simple equation there which already covered 3 pages. So... There's still some work to do. I'm sure that sooner or later somebody has a smart idea and the whole thing collapses. This is just the first discovery. Yeah?
Any more questions? So we should thank him again.